You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
Hello and welcome to this new edition of Viewpoints. On today's show, we'll have only positive news and stories for you. In small town Liverpool, Nova Scotia, Big Hearts raise $16,000 for cancer research.
Cancer's close to everybody one way or another. And, you know, it was a case where I thought we could make it so the community could show them how much they care.
To Quebec, where our local organization encourages people with disabilities to conquer Mount Offord during the fifth edition of the Everest Offered Challenge.
I had a colleague, she's been a paraplegic for the last 5 years. So we brought her up, and at the top of the mountain, she cried and she explained to me, you know, I never thought I would see a paysage like this anymore.
To BC, where a portion of the downtown village of Nanaimo is returned to the Nanaimo First Nation.
By returning this land to Nanaimo, we are not only honoring treaty commitments, but also supporting the shared economic goals and aspirations that our nation has with your government, correcting historical injustices.
And a horse-drawn theater caravan finds its first summer home. Giddy up.
I saw in the field what they refer to as a hay wagon, what they refer to as a square baler. I made a U-turn and went back and I looked at it. Immediately when I looked at it, I said, it's not a hay wagon, it's a theater wagon.
Welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Welcome, happy to have you with us again this week. My name is Boris Chassin. I'll be with you for the next 30 minutes with the help of some of the journalists from the local journalism initiative across the country. First up, a portion of downtown Nanaimo Village in BC has been returned to the Nanaimo First Nation. The BC government and the Nanaimo First Nation have purchased a 2.67-hectare property in the heart of downtown Nanaimo. This purchase will return the Suiacum Village, also known as Milestone River Village, back to the Nanaimo people who have lived there for 1,000 years before settlers came to the area. Chief Mike Weiss says the return of the land will have positive impacts on the Nanaimo people, residents of Nanaimo, the region as a whole, and everyone who visits the downtown area. Murray Rankin, BC's Minister of Indigenous Relations and Reconciliation, said the property has a lot of potential. It is also an important space for the downtown area, as well as a spiritual and cultural space for the Nanaimo people. Details with Lauren McKenzie in Nanaimo, British Columbia.
The Sinemuk First Nations has been returned, a prominent piece of property in downtown Nanaimo. The provincial government in the Sinemuk purchased the 2.67-hectare property at 1 Terminal Avenue and adjoining properties for $28.5 million. The land previously housed the old Howard Johnson Hotel, a parking lot, and other businesses that have been left derelict. CHY attended the press conference with the Sinemuk First Nations and the Ministry of Indigenous Relations and Reconciliation at Mafeosan Park on July 15th, next to the property. Chief Mike Wise of Sinemuk First Nations said that the transfer marks another monumental day for the First Nation and the province.
We are gathered to acknowledge a significant step forward with returning our Sinemuk village back to our people. It is with deep gratitude that we announced the return of 2.67 hectares of the Suiacum Village site to Nanaimo.
Wise says the Suiacum Village, also known as the Millstone River Village, is a place where the Sinemuk people have lived for thousands of years before settlers came to the area.
Here is the place where we had several longhouses, fisheries, medicines, and other cultural and spiritual practices of our people that are inherently connected to these lands. Our Nanaimo economic, cultural, social, and legal systems dominated this territory. And these are the systems that the settlers relied upon for survival and sustenance.
He says the day marks the rightful reconnection and restoration of the Sunamic people to their Squakum village. The return of land is a commitment to the Sarokin-Sunamic Treaty of 1854. This saw the Crown, represented by James Douglas, enter into the treaty with the Sunamic people in December 1854. The treaty made promises to preserve and protect Sunamic villages, enclosed fields, waterways, harvesting and gathering, and the rights to hunt and fisheries, as the Sunamic did before settlers came. Wise says the return of the land will have positive impacts on the Sunamic people, residents of Nanaimo, the region as a whole, and everyone who visits the downtown area.
By returning this land to Sunamo, we are not only honoring treaty commitments, but also supporting the shared economic goals and aspirations that our nation has with your government. Our collaboration with the province on this joint purchase of the 2.67 hectares exemplifies a genuine partnership dedicated to correcting historical injustices.
Murray Rankin, Minister of Indigenous Relations and Reconciliation, says it's been 170 years since the treaty was signed that has not always honored the promises made in it. But he says it's the government's job to rectify the injustices.
Since time immemorial, the Sunamic have been stewards of this land. And the joint acquisition of the parcels represents a huge step forward together with this community for the determination of the role of those lands in years to come.
He says the property has a lot of potential and is an important space for the downtown area, as well as a spiritual and cultural space for the Sunamic people.
So I'm thrilled on behalf of our government to be taking this step together at this time. It's going to take time, and it's going to take effort, and it's going to take passion to get to where we want to go together.
Reagan says that the process to remediate the site will take time. And as a part of the initiative, the province is contributing $1 million for this process, for the security infrastructure, demolition, and remediation costs. Both the province and Sunamic will work in partnership to maintain security at the site.
And for all of Nanaimo, this village site, Sekum, is also at the heart of Nanaimo's downtown. The city needs good development here, and it's been a real hole in our community that it's been vacant and empty in the way that it has. So with BC buying and returning the land to Nanaimo, we're repairing at the same time a historic wrong, but we're also repairing a hole in our cityscape.
She says this is one more step towards honoring the commitments made and fixing the commitments that have not been kept. After the press conference, Chief Wise said to media that Sunamic has to still figure out what the plans for the space will be, but clarified the focus will be on development. He says the plan for now is to clean up the sacred space and make it safe for the greater public, which will involve getting rid of the empty buildings as soon as possible. This is Laura McKenzie.
You're listening to Viewpoints with Boris Chassang.
Hello, I'm Candace Vetter in Embrun, Ontario, and you're tuned into Viewpoints. Follow us on X at Frequency News. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
We now make a short halt in Picton, Ontario, to tell you about the Théâtre Roulant, or the Rolling Theatre, the only horse-drawn theatre caravan in Canada. Well, this summer, it will give a break to its horses and spend a few months staying still at the Waring House, a restaurant conference center in Prince Edward County. Founder and director of the Théâtre Roulant, Conrad de Beaubien, collaborated with the Waring House, which gave the Rolling Theatre a summer home for outdoor performances and expanding it into a dinner theater venue. Prior to COVID, Beaubien's theater group performed in community venues, but red tape and scheduling forced him to rethink logistics. An old hay wagon was purchased and given a second life with the refurbishing and harnesses equipment, enabling it to be pulled by two beautiful draft horses, Susie and Sarah. During COVID, the wagon rolled around the county with actors and musicians giving performances to small audiences anywhere, but now the company has decided to stay in one place for the summer. Brenda Little in Picton, Ontario, talks with Beaubien about the company and why they're trying out this new change.
I'm sitting in the renovated Theatre Roland Wagon, the only horse-drawn theatre caravan in Canada, and I'm talking with founder and director Conrad Beaubien about the theatre group and how they are trying something new this year.
What we decided in the as being the third season, the prior two seasons, we were moving around to the wineries, you know, Café and Concert Con, Park in Picton. And what we began to realize, although we were very active in publicizing what we're doing, the regional optics, we weren't being seen. They heard about us but weren't being seen. In the fall of last year, in 23, we did one play out in front of a warehouse. And in the discussion of where to put the caravan, came about that, well, why not put it right out in front, right by the roundabout? Concerned a little bit about the road sounds and whatnot. Turned out to work very well. So in a review last fall, and being an independent in businesses and that, I just tried to analyze what do we need to do with Theatre Roland? I said it's visibility. It's that old expression of being in the right place. And so working in partnership with the warehouse, they have all the hospitality. They have rooms, they have bar, people ordering meals, and it's set up so it's an outdoor dinner theater, or just have a picnic lunch, or just a drink. And so here we are, and we decided that if we're going to be stationary, there was other works on the go, why don't we, for the first time, instead of doing one play in the season, put three plays together? What we are building is a filmic approach to theater, where our mandate is basically all original material, bringing to life, bringing to audiences something that's never been seen before. And what's great about that is that as a collective, as we work together, everybody understands we're pioneering something that's never been seen before. So the output of all of the creatives that come together is fantastic. Because there is no benchmark for this. We are forming the benchmark.
Conrad has written several plays that have been performed around the county in small venues, including community halls. But red tape and scheduling forced him to rethink the logistics. We talk about how the Horse-Drawn Wagon Theater came to be.
As we moved along, we were trying to find a home base. It's great to bring theaters. We had done with cafes or here at the warehouse, indoor facilities. We're using some of the community halls as well. It was after a disappointment in trying to work with one of the community halls that I decided that direction was not workable. And I was just driving down this country road here in the county, and I drove past, I saw in the field what they referred to as a hay wagon, but they referred to as a square baler. I made a U-turn and went back, and I looked at it. Immediately when I looked at it, I said, this is not a hay wagon, it's a theater wagon. So I bought the wagon and then brought it through different stages of welding. We had to dismantle basically all that steel and make the adjustments and have the undercarriage inspected and as I went along. But I kept building and building it and got a roof on it. And that almost took 6 or 7 years. Doing theater in a rural area is very interesting, which is why the idea of the traveling caravan. We are a large area, 350 square miles, with pockets of people living. And our idea is to bring theater to those areas. Ultimately, I want to be able to do opera in a cornfield. I wanted to do ballet performances up at Lake of the Mountain with opening the back doors and the front doors and have that open sky to perform against. To try various mediums and bring these things together. And theater and a traveling caravan, to me, reverts back to a very medieval way, but it's so genuine. We will roll into a park and people will bring a picnic lunch and a chair and sit there so we can entertain, or we can go into certain places. And it's really accessible. We get tested sometimes to see how dedicated we are. And with the wagon, there's been pioneering many aspects in doing, but the exciting part is we're seeing growth.
COVID suddenly changed everything for everybody, but Conrad's wagon was ready to go, so it was hitched up to two beautiful draft horses, Susie and Sarah, and began rolling around the county. This meant that people could be entertained by watching a live theater performance, yet be safely distanced outdoors. Rolling around Prince Edward County has been fulfilling and fun for Conrad, but the theater group is enjoying being stationary at the Waring House for the summer, bringing stability and new opportunities. For the 2024 summer season, there will be three productions. The theater group is located at the Waring House, a restaurant in Conference Center and Cookery School in Picton. Their first production, Private Reuben Pierce, is written by Conrad Beaubien and is based on a true story of a couple, Hannah and Reuben, who farm in Wellington. Reuben abandons the family for the Civil War, never writes to say he is well, but 7 years later, suddenly returns to the family farm, expecting everything to pick up where they left off.
I wanted to write, but I...
Didn't.
I wronged you. The chaos, it's just... I figured to be home sooner, it would pass.
By it, you mean Civil War?
Posters in town like a invitation to a camping trip, money to boot, the image of a cavalryman.
And you saw that as being you?
Lots going on up here. Well, we were failing. I was failing.
So here you are.
Two other works to be performed this summer include An Evening with Shakespeare and Wine, a comedy written by Mike Kirby, and in August, a play written by Murdoch Mysteries writer Maureen Jennings, Dying Like This, that explores the true meaning of friendship. For the local journalism initiative, frequencynews.ca, I'm Brenda Little.
I'm Pamela Hassan in Smithers, British Columbia. You are listening to Viewpoints.
Big Hearts scored big in Liverpool. Nova Scotia has a charity hockey game just raised more than $16,000 for cancer research. Melanie and Bruce Inglis organized a Queen's Hockey Fights Cancer on Saturday at Queen's Place Emera Centre in Liverpool. The couple organized the event in honor of two friends going through their own struggles with cancer. Rick Conrad has that story.
A charity hockey game in Liverpool on the weekend raised more than $16,000 for cancer research. Queen's Hockey Fights Cancer was hosted by Memories Cafe and Inglis Kasuf Financial Solutions at Queen's Place Emera Centre on Saturday. It was organized by Bruce and Melanie Inglis of Liverpool, who own both Memories and Inglis Kasuf.
Cancer is close to everybody one way or another, and for us this year it's been pretty challenging with some various people that we know that are fighting different kinds of cancer at different ages in life. And, you know, it was a case where I thought we could help make it so the community could show them how much they care.
We're always great at doing hockey game fundraisers. We've done several, so we knew that would be a good one for us. And we did a silent auction with the help of Carly Huskins, who was terrific at getting a lot of businesses to chip in. We had a 50-50. And donations at the door.
The Inglises say they're thrilled with the result.
Final tally isn't done yet, but we are a little over 16,000 right now. I think it's surpassed our expectations for sure.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we knew that, you know, the community would come together. We knew that we would do 5,000, hoped that we would do 10, but, you know, anything above 10, I think, is pretty remarkable.
They raised money through donations from individuals and businesses, a silent auction, a 50-50 draw, and admission to the game on Saturday. The winner of the 50-50 draw, Danny Wynot, donated the pot back to the cause. The hockey game featured the under-18 Queens County Midget Cougars going up against another group of players who suited up for the Inglis Kasuf All-Stars. Admission was $10, and about 300 people showed up to watch the All-Stars win the game in overtime on a goal by 14-year-old Eric Hanley. The Inglises said the tally is even more special given the relatively small population of the area.
It was a nice crowd, and that's on a busy Saturday in the summer when there's lots going on. And there were lots of people who did send donations and saying, you know, sorry, we can't be there.
We're thrilled. It's fantastic to have the community rally together behind us to support the people that we love in the community.
The couple organized the event in honor of a couple of friends going through their own battles with cancer. Jack Stevenson is a student athlete at Bates College in Maine. He spent part of his childhood in Queens County. The son of Jay and Renee Stevenson is currently undergoing treatment for sarcoma. Anthony McDermott of Liverpool is also battling cancer. A longtime supporter of hockey and community causes, he coached the All-Stars to victory. All the money raised will be going to the Canadian Cancer Society to support cancer research. I'm Rick Conrad.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
Province of Quebec, where the fifth edition of the Everest Offered Challenge is getting ready for its September event. The challenge, which will be held from September 19 to 22nd, allows people with physical limitations to scale new heights by providing them with an opportunity to climb Mount Offered. And this year, they want more people to be able to take part in the experience. The goal is to recruit a total of 40 teams with physical disabilities. Event organizers Fernand Courchain and Marie Bélanger spoke with Derek Bullard in Sherbrooke, Quebec, about their upcoming event designed to highlight the abilities of individuals with disabilities.
For the fifth edition of Défi Everest Offered, our guests tell us that their objective is to recruit 40 teams and 40 people with disabilities, an increase from the 28 that they had at the last edition.
I have to say right up front that the event is Fernand's event, but he is giving us his fundraising for the Défi Sportif Altergo. So it's a peer-to-peer event that he's doing. So the Défi Sportif, in fact, it's the largest annual multi-sport event in the country. Its particularities is that it welcomes 1,000 of athletes with all functional limitations, starting from school to international. So for example, our last edition was the 41st. So we had 10 days of competition. So we reunite 6,000 athletes. From all those athletes, 5,000 were students from 100 different schools all over Quebec, the Quebec country. So, and in fact, we had 22 countries all over coming in. And what's interesting with the Paralympic starting very soon, all the students, they participate in different sports all year long, and they come to the competition and they meet those elite athletes, and some of them will make it to the Paralympic Games this year.
Our guest goes on to explain how well the Défi Sportif fit with Fernand's event, mentioning that the goal to support the inclusion of people with disabilities aligned well and that it resonated deeply with their values of community and accessibility.
We make the Défi Sportif Altergo. Fernand, last year, he phoned us because he was doing his event at Offered. And with this event, he raises money. So he was looking for an event to give his money. And we really fit together because we have the same values, which are the inclusion of people with disabilities. So when he phoned me up and explained what he was doing, it helps us with the financial aspect. But more than that, we said yes right away, and we wanted to help because we are doing, in fact, a little bit the same thing.
Fernand Courchain shares in French his perspective on the profound impact of the event. He highlights how it allows individuals, even those with physical limitations, to experience the ascent of Mont Orford as a team. This event fosters social inclusion and improves overall well-being.
C'est aussi une façon d'améliorer, je dirais, la santé globale des personnes, mais qui est aussi humaine en même temps.
Marie even shares a personal story and testimony about a colleague who attended the event last year. Her colleague, a paraplegic for the past 5 years, participated in climbing Mount Orford. Here's what she had to say.
I had a colleague coming in last year to the event. She's been a paraplegic for the last 5 years. So we brought her up the mountain, and at the top of the mountain, she cried and she explained to me, you know, I never thought I would see a paysage like this anymore. So yes, she was with everybody, but it gives them the opportunity also to live some, to go through an event, you know, that they think that they are not able to do.
Our guests reassure us that there are measures in place to ensure the safety and well-being of the participants, especially considering the physical demands of transporting individuals to a mountain summit.
This is not a competition. The safety of the person is every person with disabilities, but also the volunteer is very important to us. Fernand makes sure that we well balance the team. You need some people with good physical abilities. Fernand is trained for reanimation. And also, we know how to secure transfer to help the person going from his chair, for example, into the jouelette or the specialized equipment that we have on place. When the person arrives at the event, we make sure to welcome them, but explain how it will work and what to do if something happens.
It was Fernand's personal journey towards a healthier lifestyle that became a catalyst for creating this event. 4 years ago, he decided to take control of his health by losing weight and improving his daily habits. This personal transformation led him to take on various challenges, and ultimately, he wanted to give back to the community.
J'ai commencé des défis, mais je voulais aussi redonner à la communauté, d'où l'idée des collègues de fonds.
And as a lead-up to the Défi Everest-Orford, Fernand, assisted by volunteers, already organized a weekend of outdoor activities on July 5th and 6th at Morrissey Park. He explains that it was such a touching experience that they shed a tear under the waterfalls.
Ça leur a permis de vivre ça et c'était très touchant encore une fois. On a versé des larmes sous les chutes et puis c'était vraiment simplement extraordinaire comme expérience.
Marie gives us the dates for this year's Everest Orford Challenge.
So it's from September 19 to September 22nd at Mont Orford. And I would just like to add that I did it last year. And it's wonderful, wonderful days. I invite everybody to come. It's so special to live through a day like that.
And finally, Fernand Courchain emphasizes his philosophy, making the inaccessible accessible and the impossible possible, and that with teamwork, energy, and determination, anyone can achieve what seemed impossible. He invites anyone that would like to help them reach their financial objective to do a Google search for Alter Go.
Souvent, c'est dans notre tête que c'est impossible, mais souvent, la force de l'équipe, quand on y met l'énergie puis la détermination, bon, on peut rendre l'impossible possible.
That was Derek Bullard. And that's all for us this week. Before we go, we need to thank our journalists, Lauren McKenzie, Derek Bullard, Brenda Little, and Rick Conrad. To our national editors, Victoria Fenner and Maureen McEwen, Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and your local radio station. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. Happy to have you with us again this week. And until the next, ciao.
questions or comments, our email is radio@frequencynews.ca.